Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. And how are you?
Doing good, Russell. You?
Real good, real good. If you hear rustling in the background, like somebody eating a bag of chips, that's Jenna. She stole an empty bag of pita chips, and now she feels like, you know, she's going to rip into it. So you might.
We have a fourth get. We have a fourth get. We have another guest on the show then. That's good.
We have a fourth wheel.
We're rolling with the cardboard.
I have to tell people this is a first. This is an Off the Post first. We've never gone back-to-back weeks with people from Buffalo. First, Matt Barnaby, and then Mike Augello from Hockey Buzz. How are you, Mike?
Good evening, gentlemen. Pleasure, and Jenna is always a panelist on our Buzzcast, so I'm used to this.
It's true. So, you know, I'm not even going to recap the situation. We're just going to go into the John Scott thing, and I'll start it off, and then Ant, you go, and then Mike.
Yep.
My feeling is just... It's gotten silly, but the thing is, here's the thing. At the end of the day, it's the NHL's game, right? So the NHL can do whatever they want, however they want. Now, John Scott certainly was playing along with it and knew it was irritating people. Like, there's no question about that. It's not like he didn't know, oh, I didn't know if anybody was mad. It was obvious. So there's that, and then we get the Bob McKenzie report that basically says, hey, they tried to get him to bow out gracefully, and he declined he didn't want to do it. So that's fine. That's his right. So then he gets sent to St. John's. My feeling on that is, you know, some people are like, oh, the NHL's mean or whatever. You go back and look in any sport, and every sport, the best way to take care of a situation is to trade a guy far, far away. It's always happened. You can go back in any team in any sports history. This is just what happens. This is, you know, it's sports justice, whether you like it or not. Ant, go ahead.
Here's my question for you, though, Russ. We'll start off with this. Arizona could have very easily also just kept him in the minors, right?
Yeah.
He wouldn't have been eligible to play, and he would not have been eligible to play.
Right.
So, the part that kind of rankles me a little bit here is, you know, and certainly people, we saw McKenzie's report, and obviously I'm sure the NHL was probably biting their knuckle when they saw it, but that's just the way it is. That's the scenario. But
right.
They could have easily kept him there. I can't turn around to you and say that Arizona didn't make this deal and they saw an opportunity here to add a defenseman who's in Tenorti, he has, you know, by all rights, has struggled in Montreal system to try to get a regular shift, and certainly he's going to get that opportunity in Arizona. So, again, I'm not looking at Arizona's situation and saying they didn't see an opportunity here that they were like, okay, sure, let's make this happen. So I'm not on Maloney at all. Montreal, on the other hand, I'm completely sort of in left field on for why they want Scott. Other than the fact that, you know,
right.
Again, they're planning on burying him in the minors. He has no other use other than the fact that if you want to go back to the whole Montreal's looking for size any way they can get it, well, you had Zach Kassian, didn't you?
Yeah.
You needed a big guy to bring up, and they decided. And I mean, there's obviously other extenuating circumstances there, but there's a lot of this that sort of doesn't quite make smell tests for me. I don't know. It's sort of a strange scenario. And again, I can't dig in on Arizona for taking the opportunity. So that's kind of my initial take on it. That being said, do I believe McKenzie? In terms of it being an orchestrated deal to try to avoid this thing, sure. Is it a bad PR? Probably for a few days. It's probably going to be, you know, there's a lot. We're going to get a lot of talk
for a day and a half,
at least a day or two, and then after that, it's going to die off. And I feel bad for Scott in terms of the fact that he does have his situation with his wife back in, you know, in Arizona. But again, he's a journeyman.
Mm-hmm.
Bounces around a lot in his career.
Mm-hmm.
It stinks, but there's always this possibility that you can get dealt at any time. So, again, I'm not quite on the whole, you know, crying tears for John Scott that he got traded. So that's my take.
Okay. Mike?
Well, first of all, I believe McKenzie's report, and I think it's rather sort of petty of the NHL. I mean, obviously they didn't like this situation, and if McKenzie's report is correct, which I have no reason to believe otherwise, you know, they tried to get him gracefully to bow out. I heard him speak on TSN radio in Toronto and said, you know, they wanted him to bring his family to the All-Star game, just don't play, you know, because it would make it an embarrassment. Well, honestly, over the last few years, the All-Star game has been an embarrassment. It's just been boring. It's just been a, you know, I understand the reason.
Well, boring's different than an embarrassment. See, I'll go with you on boring at times, but, you know, I don't think it's been an embarrassment. But boring, sure. Yeah, at times it has.
Well, I mean, an embarrassment in the sense that it's not really a game. It's a spectacle. It's them showing off the talent. But it's shinny. It's not hockey. If it's hockey, you know, I think there's going to be some consequences and some actual emotional investment in this game because they have money on it, and it'll be 3-on-3, and I think it'll be interesting. I was all for watching this game because of 3-on-3 and because of John Scott wanting to see him, you know, in the on Saturday in the skating contest and whatever. Now we're not going to see that. It's one less reason for me to watch. And now, I mean, I know a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people online saying, well, maybe I'm not going to watch it. I mean, that's one way to get back at the NHL. But it's just, you know, can you have a little fun? Can you allow something to happen? I mean, this isn't Rory Fitzpatrick. This was, you know, this was an orchestrated sort of protest, I think, by some people online. And they went by the rules and got John Scott in there, and they, I think, had to orchestrate this to prevent this embarrassment from happening.
Okay, and that's all fair.
Mike, the only thing I'll say is, and in response to that is, in terms of, you're saying it as an organized protest, in what manner? Because, again, the player, the fans are the ones that kind of voted him in, but what are they protesting the event in this case? I mean, that's what I'm not quite digging in on here.
Well, I saw this grow organically. You know, I don't know if it was certain, you know, podcasters who influenced this from happening. I mean, I don't know where it started from. But after a while, it grew in momentum because John Scott is one of the few fighters left in the league, and this is a representation of something in the game that is going away, and a lot of fans are upset about that. So here's a little bit of protest. Also, it's a guy who's, you know, pretty much a borderline NHLer, and I think that was, you know, just because the game itself is nothing spectacular in terms of an event, that this was a way of just, you know, maybe making it a little bit of a joke. But I think the NHL made it look more of a joke by doing this. Now, you know, they're not going to fess up to the fact that, you know, they orchestrated this. This was, you know, the Arizona Coyotes making a deal. But when Don Maloney comes out and says, well, I'm thinking of, you know, the Coyotes, not John Scott, well, yeah, to me, like you said, it doesn't pass the smell test. There's an agenda going on here, and they just didn't want to be embarrassed by having this guy playing the game.
Well, it doesn't help either when you turn on NHL Tonight and they show, like, three blank faces from Arizona, and, hey, which one's going to be voted to the All-Star team? Like, they could have waited a day for that. The timing on that was bad.
And honestly, if I was now, it's easy for me to say I'm going to give up, you know, $285,000 of his remaining salary. But if his wife is 8 months pregnant, I don't know, you know, and he's with twins from what I understand, and I don't know if that's the case.
Yeah.
But, you know, if that's the case and he's going to be in St. John's, Newfoundland while she's in Arizona, I'm retiring. And I'm having a press conference basically saying, you know, the NHL, you know, but by pulling this off, the NHL has basically ended my career early because, you know, I'm going someplace where I don't want to go.
And he has that right. I mean,
yeah, he does. He does have that right, but it's tough to say.
But he played along with it. Again, he did.
He did. Yeah, and my whole thing is again, and I know it stinks. It happened, and unfortunately, it does happen in walks of life, and we're obviously focused in on the fact of this stinks. But I mean, sometimes businesses are cold and will say that it's, you know, we need you to move, but at the same time, is there a certain whiff of vindictiveness in some ways that we gave you this opportunity and you decided to not take it? So this is always a possibility of what was going to happen. And again, I, my whole thing is, again, the turning it into a 3-on-3 tournament this year is kind of, I mean, while it already has sort of, you've already sort of, as entertaining as the 3-on-3 overtimes have been, it's going to have the potential for just, again, I don't want to use the phrase freak show variety, but it kind of is going to be in some way.
See. I mean, it could be exciting, too.
I think the thing that's largely overlooked here is that
there's not going to be a Kickstarter campaign for John Scott, because the fact that he's actually making $575,000 is a miracle.
Yeah, precisely. And then again, at the end of the day, despite the fact you've been transferred to East Jabip, as my mom would like to say, that's the way it is. That happens in the job. It's part of the risk that you take in the job.
Yeah, no question. So we'll move on from that. Let's talk a little Pittsburgh Penguins, because at the start of the season, there were trades made. The defense was ignored. Jim Rutherford will give you his best, hey, we're built for the playoffs kind of speech, and they're not. And right now, there's teams ahead of them. And it's getting a little worse. Like, by the time you hit the All-Star break, if you're, like, 4 or 5 out and you got 4 or 5 teams to jump, you almost have to have, like, an Ottawa Senators finish to the season just to make it. And so I kind of wonder, are they gonna press the panic button and get rid of every last prospect they have? Or what do you think is going to happen?
It's going to be – they're at a very critical point. I think we're obviously in agreement with that. They've got to sort of make a decision whether they're going to, you know, within the next few weeks or so, where they're trending. As of right now, again, you know, they're treading water right now in terms of their record. And those are their last 10. I think they've won. They're like 4-6. You know, obviously 2 regulation losses.
Yeah.
They did get some points here too. But again, there just seems to be some of the players are just starting to kick things a little bit in the gear. But again, there's just a whiff about that. There's just a thing about that team right now that they just don't seem fully engaged. But again, we went into the season sort of looking at Pittsburgh and saying, in the whole division, and saying, you know, they look like a backdoor playoff team, because again, the back at their defensive unit is just not going to be
not
up
there.
To standard. There's some talent there. I mean, you have a Letang back there certainly, but you know, and again, we were looking at potentially maybe when they move for Daly as well, but maybe that'll give them a little bit of a jump in the back end. But in reality, it hasn't really. So again, they've got their problems, Pittsburgh, and they're very much going to be in decision-making mode here pretty soon, depending on where they're standing in a couple weeks.
Mike, what's your take?
I mean, they've improved a little bit with the addition of Daly. Letang has played better since he came off the injured list, but, you know, he's been so, you know, injury-prone, and so had so many problems the last couple of years. I don't know how much they can really depend on him. And the thing is, after those two, really, I mean, Mata is a good young defenseman, but he's had his problems over the last couple of years. And then, you know, Ian Cole, Dumoulin, I mean, it's not very deep. Now, and Russ, you and I have talked about this before. I think Rutherford is all in, and I think he's desperate as hell. So I think he's going to sell off anything he can to get this team in the playoffs, whether it means moving a Daniel Sprong or trading a Matt Murray. I think they made the Kessel deal to basically make a run in the next 2 to 3 years. Now, to make a run, you have to get in the playoffs. Anything can happen once you get in. This team is imperfect. But with that core group of Malkin and Crosby, I think Rutherford is going to justify, you know, short-term risks like trading these prospects to get players who can help them right now. I don't think I wouldn't do it, but I think they're going to do it.
I think the worst part is if I'm a Penguins fan, Jim Rutherford clearly seems like he'll be gone the minute the season ends, good or bad, just heading off into retirement. And that's never a good thing when you think your GM's in that position. It just, as a fan, right, Ann, it doesn't give you a lot of confidence.
No, it wouldn't give you a lot of confidence. I mean, if the plan transition is to go to, you know, just long enough for Jason Botterill or somebody like that to take over going forward, again, what are you going to be leaving behind? I mean, granted, that, again, much like we said with John Scott, there's always the risk, obviously, of movement in the business, and you get what you, you know, the hand is dealt, you know, with what you get. But you really get that impression that if they go all in, as Mike is indicating, there's a chance for a pretty, you know, if they don't win it, there's a chance for a really dry period for the Penguins here if they're not careful. I mean, there's talent, but, you know, there has to be sort of a culture built in there that I'm just not, that I have some concerns with there.
No, and that's fair. All right, so if we look at the Flyers, Rangers, Devils, Carolina, why I just noticed today, I have no idea, and it seems like others have just noticed today, but like the Flyers have played 5 less games in Carolina. They've played a couple less than Pittsburgh, 4 less than New Jersey, 3 less than Ottawa. Like, how have they played so few games with this schedule? And actually, you know, now they're in pretty good position since they've gone on this winning streak, and anything could happen. Look, it's early. But when you look at that and then you say, just to get to that 49-point area where even Montreal's got 3 games in hand, very conceivable, where teams above them, the Islanders and Rangers, they're sort of treading water. Like, Washington's in their own atmosphere, and then the other guys are treading water, and I have a feeling like every couple of days the wild card is just going to change positions until the end of the season. It's going to be like musical chairs.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going to be happening, I think, as we get further and further into the season. And again, as you pointed out, and I mentioned this to you earlier, this conversation that Bill Meltzer and I had the other night about the fact that how many games in hand that Philadelphia has here over other teams in the Metropolitan. It's really kind of remarkable that they're only 41, and the closest teams that are ahead of them in terms of games played are Pittsburgh at 43. Pittsburgh, the Rangers, and the Capitals have played 43 games. Carolina played 46. Jersey's played 45. So there's a real chance for them to sort of make hay. The key for Philadelphia is, again, they got to also start stringing some things together on the road. They've been good at home this season. They're 11 wins certainly at home, but again, they're 8-10-3 on the road. That's got to improve. That's something that absolutely has to improve for them. And again, they've used this stand. They've been off to a pretty good start. Again, 4 wins. But again, before this 4-game winning streak, they also started up right out of the Christmas break with 3 straight losses. So they can't keep going up and down and up and down. But can Philadelphia be a player potentially into that wild card mix? Yeah, by virtue of what they've done in terms of their 5-on-5 play has been pretty good. I think there was only 60 some goals at 5-on-5 that they've given up. So they've been one of the better teams in terms of goals against on 5-on-5. The problem for Philadelphia has been their special teams. Their penalty kill has been not very good for the last several years, but the power play has uncharacteristically become a problem for them. And that's something that has to be righted in order for them to really be into the playoff picture there.
Mike, what's your thought?
I mean, if you look at the standings, you take the third-place team in the Metro, the Rangers, Tampa Bay, mm-hmm. the 2 wild cards, and then the 5. There's 9 teams within 6 points.
Yeah.
It's insane. And the thing is that all these teams have massive flaws. I mean, I watched the Bruins tonight play the Sabres, win 4-1, and they were lucky Robin Leonard was in goal because that's the only reason they scored 4 goals. They can't generate offense without David Krejci. Now you go down the line, Montreal's without Price, the Rangers have their problems, Tampa Bay has been inconsistent. I mean, all these teams have what you would think are fatal flaws, but all these teams are so close together that, you know, a win here or there is going to make the difference. And I think where this is going to play out, and it's going to be very interesting, is on February 29th, because none of these teams, if they stay this close, are going to sell. They're either going to stand pat or they're going to buy. And at most, you're going to have 5 or 6 teams being sellers at the deadline, and those will be Columbus and Buffalo and Toronto and maybe Vancouver and Winnipeg in the West, and that's it. And to me, that means it's a seller's market, and teams like Buffalo and Toronto are going to go to the bank and get a lot more for pretty average players who are rental players.
Nope, that's fair. All right, so now when we look towards the bottom in the East, and sorry, West fans, we're not going to get to much West talk today, but it's just sort of the way it's shaken out. But I just wanted to give that spoiler. So if we look further down now in the East, and we say, okay, towards the bottom, you know, you've got your your Leafs, your Columbuses, your Buffaloes. Now, the Leafs are expected, and Mike can certainly talk about that. Buffalo's kind of like a weird spot because, you know, you don't hear much out of Murray, and even though they didn't have a number one goalie or, you know, like a absolute elite goalie, I don't know, I think the expectations were higher this year. In Columbus, we certainly know expectations were higher, and now it seems like they're almost in tank mode. And so, like, Ant, if you're a fan of Buffalo, Columbus, and we'll have to, you know, if you want, we could throw Edmonton just because they're in the bottom there.
Mm-hmm.
Edmonton certainly was expecting better. If you're a fan of those teams, I guess you would give Buffalo more of a pass than Edmonton and Columbus,
yeah.
Or should none of them get a pass?
I'm Buffalo to a point. I think Buffalo you have to because, again, they're still in the process of and people know where they're at. And I think there's something to watch there in Buffalo this year, which I couldn't say, you know, last year was next to not watchable at all, whereas there's
right.
moments where I've watched the Sabres and they have moments where you look at it and you say, okay, they've got something to build here for themselves for the future. Eichel, obviously, a wonderful player for them. Rasmus Ristolainen, who I loved him in his draft year. It was a player that, you know, you sort of remember crossing my fingers, you know, seeing, you know, where he was going to potentially end up. You know, from Philadelphia, was certainly trying to restack their.
Sounds like Ant may have dropped out for a minute. So, Mike, I'll switch to you.
Ross, you have me?
Oh, yeah, I got you now. Okay, you're back.
Okay, sorry, that's okay. Mike, go ahead. That's fine.
Well, I mean, honestly, the Sabres, I mean, there are things to watch, like Anthony was saying. I mean, Eichel is, I think, an impressive talent, and Sam Reinhart has started to show some progress. He had a hat trick.
He has, yeah.
Last weekend against Winnipeg. The problem is that, you know, they sort of put a little hodgepodge together on the blue line, you know, adding guys like Carlo Koliakovo and Cody Franzen late in the off season. I don't think Franzen has really fit in with what Bylsma seems to want to do. But they're not set up to be like a massive seller at the deadline. I don't think anybody's gonna be knocking down the doors of Tim Murray to get Brian Chianta and Matt Molson, and
right.
the only UFA that they have who I might attract some teams because of his relatively low salary is McGinn. So
mm-hmm.
I think what they're gonna do is stand pat, and they're gonna play these kids a lot. And I think, you know, as they get used to Bylsma's coaching style and they get more experience in the second half, I think, you know, the Sabres will improve a little bit. I don't think they're gonna get back into the playoff race, but I think they'll improve, just like I think Edmonton will improve when McDavid comes back, and they've been playing better the last month or so too. The teams that
but
are going to
here's the
go
thing
down.
About Edmonton, though. Here's the one thing yep. about Edmonton. They are 5-14-4 on the road. Some mm. of that includes McDavid, too. Like, there's just still something not right about this team.
Right. Well, they have subpar goaltending, and they have a young defense. I mean,
yeah.
you know, I mean, not before the deadline, but over the summer, Peter Chiarelli has got to come to the realization that he cannot keep all of these forwards, that he needs probably to trade one of them to get himself a 20 to 25 minute defenseman. You know, if it's Eberle, if it's Yakupov, if it's Nugent Hopkins, he's got to do it, because you can't have this collection of talent, and you're probably going to get another one with a top five pick in this
mm-hmm.
draft, and, you know, just keep piling up the forwards, but then have, you know, Anders Nilsson and Cam Talbot as your goaltender, and give a 7-year deal to Oscar Klefbom, because you have no other option but to do it.
I'll stop you there for a second, because I'll say, Ant, they're
mm-hmm.
not going to, if they were to pick first again, they're not going to pull a Mario Williams. Like, they're going to take Austin Matthews. Like, they're not going to have a
they're going to take Austin Matthews in that spot. And again, but that also feeds into the potential moving of one of those forwards. And again, Mark Spector's report that the Oilers had offered to Nashville Ryan Nugent Hopkins for Seth Jones before
okay.
they decided to make the deal. So, you know, again, based on Spector's report, that's something that Chiarelli is maybe, if he's trying to already enact at this point. He knows what he has on his blue line right now isn't good enough, and that he does need to have that guy. Darnell Nurse, I like Nurse a lot, but again, he's not quite ready to be that guy. Jones would have been very interesting if they would have been able to grab him. But again, that's something that they're going to gear towards. And again, it's going to be one. And again, with Draisaitl getting better and better as well, I think it, at this point now, you have to, if you're the Oilers, you look at it and say, okay, we've got some surplus here. We have to make the decision. We may not like the fact that we have to deal with Ryan Nugent Hopkins, but for the long-term benefit of the team in terms of their structure going forward, the blue line has to be addressed. And again, one of those guys is going to probably have to go.
All right, so to switch gears, I'm going to switch it to something fun, because I think we're going to see something at the end of February. I'm going to be going to cover that Stadium Series game in Colorado, between Colorado and Detroit. But I think we're going to see the best alumni game that's ever been played. Now, I always say the best one that I'd seen, the Flyers-Rangers was fun, but it wasn't like the best from a competition standpoint. Best from a competition standpoint was the Heritage Classic. But now, the original one, the first one, when Gretzky was there and everybody else, Guy Lafleur, Messier, all of them. Okay, but now listen to this list. And the funny thing is they're playing 3 20-minute periods. Like, this is getting real, okay? So listen to here's the Avalanche roster so far. Billington's playing, so already you've got upper management, Rob Blake, Ray Bourque, Adam Foote, Peter Forsberg, Claude Lemieux, Curtis Lecision, Sandis Ogilish, Mike Ritchie, Patrick Roy, Joe Sakic, Chris Simon, Stefan Yell, Adam Deadmarsh is coaching. That's a pretty good team.
Oh, my goodness. That's basically the 96 Cup winning team almost there. Almost
it is,
entirely.
And I went and saw them for a game in the Cup, and that's – Mike, what do you think?
Did you
that's unbelievable.
Playing? Was Krupp on that roster by any chance?
Yeah, I think didn't he score the game-winning goal in the
– Yeah, he won the Cup against
Cup
Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
People are going to watch this. Now, here's who's on the Red Wings alumni
fight.
Roster.
We might actually get a fight or two in this game. Because depending on the Detroit's roster. I'm joking, but still.
Here's Detroit's roster, and it's not complete, obviously. Doug Brown, Chris Draper, Yuri Fischer, Tomas Holmstrom, Joey Koser, Martin Lapointe, Nick Lidstrom, Kurt Malpe, Larry Murphy. That's a real good start, guys.
Yeah.
I hope Chris Draper is wearing a cage.
Nice. Look at my face. Look what he did to my face. I still remember that. I still remember that interview after the game. Look at my
I can't believe I shook that guy's hand.
I can't believe I shook that guy's hand.
I just think this is tremendous, though, and this could set the bar for alumni games for a very, very, very long time. So I'm just telling you, people, it's February 27th. You're going to want to watch this on television. You will. There's no question. What were we going to say?
We already saw Jay Miller's teeth get knocked out at the in Boston. So, I mean, I'm sure there's going to have to be some blood drawn for it to equal that.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Some things that I guess we wouldn't have expected with a couple minutes to go in the show. Maybe we'll go like 2 minutes in overtime. Anaheim scored 4 goals so far. But, it's like the blind squirrel. I guess every once in a while you're going to have
Dallas is having some issues. They are having issues, and this is becoming exacerbated now tonight.
Yeah, they're going to have to make another trade on the blue line. Like, there's no question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean they have a couple million, I think $3 million under the cap, so they can find themselves. Something. And the thing is, you look at their defense, and Goligoski, Klingberg is great, but after that, you just have a bunch of maybe threes and fours. They really don't have a defenseman other than Klingberg that really stands out.
Like,
I think
Demare's not exactly reliable. He's okay, but he's not that reliable.
They need a top pairing defenseman, and it's tough to find one at this late date.
So now the last question of the night. This will be the tough one because this will be like Sophie's choice. It will. Because it's going to be hard to figure out. Like Minnesota, I'm pretty sure, is making the playoffs, right? But then when you get – and see, we are talking a little West. When you're getting to that last wild card spot, unless something amazing happens, you're probably just talking about, oh, I don't know, Colorado, Nashville, Vancouver, Winnipeg, maybe Anaheim if they don't win the division, but, you know, they probably will. And so out of those teams, who makes it? And you know what's funny? I know it seems out there and unrealistic, but I still think Vancouver's in it. Like, I think Colorado's in it right now because Varlamov's played great and they've made some moves. But for some reason, and because nobody expects it, I think Vancouver is going to hang in it. But I don't know. What do you think, Ant?
I have my concerns with the Canucks making the postseason. And I do like Willie DeJardin. Don't get me wrong. I do. It's just there's something about Vancouver that doesn't quite grab me as a playoff team. I think Nashville can certainly make the push here. I know they're the closest one here. I think, you know, again, they're trying to, you know, they made a major paradigm shift here by acquiring Ryan Johansson for Jones. I think they can defensively compensate for that. And the key is going to be, again, if Johansson can round into shape and find some line mates that he can confuse himself with, such as, you know, again, they brought up Kevin Fiala. They're trying to see if that's going to work. And, again, it's a slow thing for them. But, again, I think they are the team that's most equipped to potentially pip Minnesota and Colorado in this circumstance to get into a postseason berth. I like Nashville's chances of getting a backdoor entry here.
Mike, what do you think? Do you think Anaheim gets that third spot in the Pacific, or do you think they fight in for the wild card, or do you think they don't make it, and or else who do you like?
I think they're going to contend for one of the three spots in the Pacific. I mean, I'm waiting for the Arizona bubble to burst, but, you know, Louis Domingue is standing on his head, and they're getting goal scoring. So, I mean, right now they've, you know, Tippett's done a great job. San Jose, I mean, one game they blow out the Leafs 7-0, and then the next game they can't score a goal. I mean, they're very inconsistent in spite of having a lot of talent. So,
7-12 at home, that's bizarre.
And 15-6 on the road. It's just crazy. I honestly don't know how Colorado is in a wild card spot right now. It's simply Varlamov. I think he's standing on his head, and that's the reason.
Well, and Duchesne's got a bunch of goals. He's up to like 17, I think.
Right, and McKinnon's great, but you know, they sort of wallowed there when Varlamov was out, and now they're really making a charge. With Nashville, I think Nashville is basically the Pittsburgh of the West. I think Poile is in the same position as Rutherford, and he's got the cap room. He's going to go out and get two or three rental guys to help them get in the playoffs and get as far as they can, because I think his reputation is on the line right now, because now he's traded Seth Jones, their future on the blue line, for the center that he's been missing for decades.
Nope, I think that's fair. My last little point, and Mike, you could answer this one because it's pointed right at the Leafs. Mm-hmm. Connor Hellebuyck got a shutout tonight. Like, if I'm Shevardayoff, I'm trading two goalies. I'm trading Pavlik and I'm trading Hutchinson. Like, I'm not looking back. And maybe that's where the Leafs will get a goalie.
But I don't think either of those guys is an answer.
I think Hutchinson could be a stopgap.
Yeah, Hutchinson's I think the Leafs would re-sign James Reimer for a year or two rather than trade for Hutchinson and give up an asset for him. And you know, and Pavlik is I think overpriced. I think he's making $5 million and he's inconsistent. I mean, somebody asked me and did a Q&A column a couple days ago, you know, whether who the starting goaltender for the Leafs next year would be, and I said Jonathan Bernier, simply because they can't get rid of a $4 million goaltender who can't stop a puck.
Not fair. That's totally fair. All right, we're going to leave it there. Mike, thanks for coming on. That's going to end this Off the Post, and we'll catch everybody next time.